This rising sediment keeps pace with the sinking crust, and the level of the land stays pretty constant. Sinking deltas become a problem if the river's waters are dammed or channeled, rushed to the sea without a chance to spread new sediment over the wide delta valley. This lack of new sediment is what causes New Orleans to be below sea level. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom, with help from Bob Blakely in Geological Sciences. For a moment of science, I'm Don Glass.
In sports, the World Series gets underway Wednesday night in St. Petersburg, Florida. The site for the opener was not determined until last night when Tampa Bay claimed the American League pennant with a 3-1 victory over Boston in Game 7 of the AL Championship Series. The Rays will be hosting the NL champion Philadelphia Phillies. A second straight National League Central title has earned Cubs general manager Jim Hendry a 4-year contract extension through the 2012 season. The team's 97-64 record represents the most wins for the franchise since the 1945 team finished 98-56. And the curtain comes down on Week 7 of the NFL season tonight in Foxborough with a clash of traditional AFC powers. The 3-2 New England Patriots will host the 4-2 Denver Broncos. That's sports.
WILO programs are made possible with support from the Art Mart in Lincoln Square, Urbana. The Art Mart's deli, grocery, and bakery feature premium foods and ingredients for cooking and entertaining, including Reuben's chocolates. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio.
Retired professional football players and their union disagree. Once again, the two sides have fought bitterly over pension issues and disability payments. Today, a trial was to begin in federal court in San Francisco to determine if the union broke a promise to pay former NFL players tens of millions of dollars from licensing deals. NPR's Tom Goldman has the story.
In recent times, retired NFL players have presented a less than rosy view of life after football. Paltry pensions, sometimes no financial help for crippling disabilities. But now they say their union has committed, in football terms, its most grievous personal foul.
Well, I think economically it's the most important issue because this union gets about $100 million of free cash flow a year from their licensing activities. These 2,056 men have not received one penny.
Attorney Ron Katz is representing those 2,000-plus NFL retirees in a class-action lawsuit against the NFL Players Association and its marketing wing, Players, Inc. Katz says the case is based on a very simple premise.
We signed a contract, we didn't get paid.
The contract in question is called a Group Licensing Authorization, GLA. The 2,000-plus plaintiffs in the case signed GLAs so they'd get paid when the images of six or more present or former NFL players are used in commercials, video games, collector cards, and the like. Much like the game of football, the language of the GLAs is team-oriented. It says the money generated by licensing will be divided between all participating players who signed GLAs. This share the wealth concept will be a major point of contention in the trial. Jeffrey Kessler is the lawyer for the NFLPA.
The claims in this case are an attempt by a tiny group of retired players who frankly have a long-standing vendetta against the NFL Players Union to get a share of money that belongs to the active NFL players for their licensing.
Active players, says Kessler, are responsible for the many millions generated through licensing, and the GLAs do not require them to share with retired players. But, reading from a GLA signed in 2002 by one of the plaintiffs, there's no language supporting what Kessler says.
Welcome to another game of Madden NFL. I'm Marshall Falk, bringing you a breakdown of today's matchup.
The retired players also say the union actively tried to deny payments. Electronic Arts, the company that makes the popular Madden NFL video games, pays the union an estimated $25 to $30 million a year in licensing fees. The plaintiffs have emails that they say show union officials told EA to scramble images of retired players in the Madden game so those players wouldn't have to be paid. Kessler acknowledges the scrambling, but says it was done to protect retired players whose images hadn't been paid for. Former Buffalo Bills defensive back Jeff Nixon regrets having to sue his union, but Nixon, one of the plaintiffs, says it's important.
When we sign these group licensing agreements, we've looked at it as the same way the active players do. You can be a bench warmer, you can be a superstar, but you're still going to get paid because you're part of this team. And we really thought that we were part of the team. Now, we're finding out we weren't. We were actually a burden to them.
Nixon is one of the many former players hoping the trial leads to reforms at the NFLPA. The union is looking for new leadership after the recent death of its controversial executive director, Gene Upshaw. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
Should, by chance, you find yourself in Los Alamos, New Mexico, don't miss the Black Hole. It's a surplus store and museum. The inventory comes from the Department of Energy's Los Alamos National Laboratory, the nation's foremost nuclear weapons lab. The owner of the Black Hole is also the town's most famous peacenik. For years, the eccentric pacifist and nuclear junk dealer has been a thorn in the side of the lab. Here's NPR's John Burnett.
In the interests of our national defense, the Department of Energy is charged with the responsibility of directing our nuclear weapons program. The DOE's Los Alamos National Laboratory conducts underground nuclear weapons tests.
The most visited attraction in Los Alamos is the Bradbury Science Museum, where you'll find replicas of the two most famous bombs in history, Little Boy and Fat Man, dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, respectively. The next most visited attraction is the Black Hole, whose proprietor has a very different presentation.
My name is Ed Grotes, and I've been here almost 60 years in Los Alamos.
He's hard to miss, 85 years old, with a cloud of white hair, wearing purple camo pants, and a peace button on his sweater.
The first 20 of those years, from 1949 to 1969, I worked in the laboratory. I came as a machinist, and I had a key role in making better, put that in quotes, better atomic bombs.
Grotes quit the lab in 69 over his opposition to the Vietnam War. He sold Indian curios with his wife, Margaret, for a few years, then opened the Black Hole in 1980.
I refer to everything as nuclear waste. It's waste from the nuclear business. But I only sell about 1% of what I buy. And so there's been a huge accumulation of stuff.
Grotes is a compulsive buyer at the lab's monthly auctions of surplus government property. As a former machinist, he can't stand to see precision equipment thrown away. So he's got everything from oscilloscopes and galvanometers to Geiger counters and centrifuges stacked in canyons in the Black Hole.
I'm still buying. I'm about dead, but I'm still buying.
Where do you put it? There's no more room in the store.
We just pile it higher and deeper. We'll find a place.
The sheer quantity of stuff on his cluttered 5-acre compound is overwhelming. Most of it was used for bomb making, though you won't find radioactive material or classified computers here. The hardware for sale is more mundane.
These are vacuum butterfly valves. Look at here. Brand new. They cost $325 a piece.
Who comes in and wants a butterfly valve?
It's very seldom.
He named it the Black Hole because, by his own admission, everything goes in and nothing comes out. Business is a trickle, mainly tourists, artists seeking found objects, movie set decorators, and the occasional craftsman.
Hello.
Hi. Sorry to interrupt.
Can I help?
Yeah, I just wanted to buy these gloves and buy some other weird
stuff. I charge 25 a pair for them, yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Atomic Ed is best known around town, not as a junk man, but as a rabble-rouser. Every August, to remember the atomic bombs dropped on Japan, he joins out-of-town peaceniks and unfurls a large banner that says, "We apologize for the nuclear bomb." And his letters about nuclear disarmament appear in the local newspaper every few weeks.
One bomb is too many, no matter who has it. They have to think a different way. I don't know whether humanity can get out of this nuclear trap.
The backdrop to his sentiments is a company town where the National Lab supports 90% of the local economy, where you cruise along Oppenheimer Drive and get your glasses at Atomic Eye Care. No wonder for many people here, Ed Grothis is
pretty much written off as a crank. Oh, there's Grothis again with one of his dang letters, or geez, Ed is down there with his signs, or...
Steve Stoddard is an outspoken World War II veteran and former Republican state senator. He and other vets regularly show up to counter-protest whatever Grothis has to say.
But you can't fault his courage in the sense that he knows he's making people angry and he's in a town that certainly doesn't share his feelings.
When asked for a response to Ed Grothis, a spokesman for Los Alamos National Laboratory answered with a resounding no comment. The lab finds Grothis' antics tiresome, such as the time during the Win Ho Lee spy scandal when Grothis started selling lab surplus computer disks with top secret stickers on them. The FBI confiscated the computer disks and later returned them. He also offends Catholics when he dresses up in a cardinal's garb, offering to celebrate critical mass at his First Church of High Technology. But even when Grothis invites descriptions of a buffoon or a crackpot, there's something fundamentally necessary about what he does, says Kyle Wheeler. She's a former Los Alamos County counselor and a retired technical writer at the lab.
He keeps writing these letters to the editor and keeps bringing up issues that maybe a lot of people don't want to think about. So I sort of think of him as the conscience of the community.
Ed Grothis will probably not be around much longer. He has cancer, and that has lent a certain urgency to his crusade. As perhaps his final creative protest, Grothis has produced two 32-foot-tall granite obelisks, which he happily shows visitors. He opens a shipping container. In the stone is inscribed a screed he wrote against nuclear bombs, translated into 15 languages.
On this front surface here, you see Hindi and Italian.
Grothis tried to give the ungainly monuments to Los Alamos County, but the Art in Public Places Board politely and emphatically turned him down. Los Alamos, which is trying to soften its history, prefers the motto currently seen at the town entrance, "Where discoveries are made." The lab would rather talk about its research into fuel cells or its training of UN inspectors to enforce the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
And here is Spanish. This is Arabic.
So the doomsday stones gather dust, as do the centrifuges and Geiger counters, but the black hole's fame seems to be spreading. A Polish tourist stops by to take a picture of Ed Grothis in front of the store.
Do you mind if I...
In the town where the nuclear age began, its most committed opponent remains its greatest curiosity. John Burnett, NPR News.
Thank you.
You got to sign the
background. Yeah, definitely. Oh, my God. This is very exciting.
It's 2:53. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Here's some exciting news. We met a challenge. Yes, we met the challenge was going on during the closing market report today. So $1,000 has been added to the total. So now I just got the very latest. We are at $134,316. How about
fantastic.
That, Martha?
Fantastic.
Okay, so thanks to everyone who has called in. But maybe, you know, you haven't met the challenge of joining the Friends of WILL. If you're listening and you haven't yet got around to it, now's a great time to do it. Give us a call with a pledge of financial support. Keep us going strong here on AM 580. We're here today to make sure that the programs you enjoy are here tomorrow. And we are hoping, by the way, to enroll 300 new supporters, and we're a little over one-third of the way there toward that goal. So you can help out right now by giving us a call to 217-244-9455.
Or maybe you'd like to make your gift online. Go to our secure website, willpledge.org. Those letters get in my way sometimes. You know, if you contribute at the $180 level, you may choose as your thank you gift the Sony Digital Radio. And, Celeste, I think the coolest thing about this is that it comes with a remote control.
Yeah.
You know, just wanting to lie in bed those extra minutes and turn up the radio. But the digital radio gives you static-free sound, so if your alarm goes off at 6:15 in the morning like mine does before we're up to full power at this time of year, you get that. It's easy to see large, full-dot, backlit LCD with brightness contrast, and you can join the growing number of listeners who support the service that matters to them. Make your contribution now by going to willpledge.org or calling 217-244-9455.
And if you're within the FM 90.9 listening area, you'll get AM 580 clear as a bell, and it's beautiful. We have one at home. It is wonderful in the evening. On the weekend, it is crystal clear.
And there are 20 station presets to use that remote control for AM and FM.
And the FM sounds wonderful, too, on these HD radios. It is really something to behold. So if you're an AM 580 fan and you're within the FM listening area, the WYLL FM listening area, it's a great deal. So we hope you'll join us with a contribution of $180, and you may choose as your thank you gift the Sony Digital Radio. So maybe $180 you're not quite there yet. How about $100 a year? That's 27 cents a day.
Give so, what works for you.
That's right.
All we ask is you do your best.
You decide the amount. But remember this. This is the important thing. AM 580 is listener supported. Some listeners give $25 a year, some $1,000 or more. Give an amount that works for you. We'll use your contribution to help pay for programs and the costs of broadcasting. The ultimate goal, keeping you informed, empowered, and engaged. So go to willpledge.org or pick up the phone and dial or punch in, I suppose is what we should be saying. I'm of that generation. I still remember the dial phone. 217-244-9455. 244-WILL.
Earth and Sky.
Monday, October 20th, 2008. The Orionid meteor shower is expected to rain down the most meteors tomorrow morning, Tuesday, in the wee hours before dawn.
In some years, with a dark, moonless sky, you can see 10 to 20 Orionid meteors every hour. But this year, the moon will wash out all but the brightest Orionids.
Meteors are fancifully called shooting stars. They aren't really stars, but space debris burning up in the Earth's atmosphere. Every year in October, our planet Earth crosses the orbital path of Comet Halley. Particles shed by the comet slam into our upper atmosphere, where they vaporize at some 100 kilometers or 60 miles above the Earth's surface.
The Orionids are extremely fast meteors plummeting into Earth's atmosphere at 66 kilometers or 41 miles per second. Maybe half of the Orionid meteors leave persistent trains, ionized gas trails that last for a few